Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking a beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, right now I want to introduce our special guest today, Dr. Ed Vieira. And we're going to be talking about the forgotten role of constitutional money, what's happening to our monetary system. And, you know, most people look at a greenback and they think it's money. But is it money? And, of course, why are we having so many problems today? Why are our industries moving offshore? Why are we seeing 230,000 jobs lost here in the state of California and large layoffs all across the country, and we find all of our states are in up over the hills in debts? And so certainly the monetary system doesn't look very sound today. But maybe there's a reason behind that, and I think unless you understand the history of money and how we got to where we are, you can't have any idea what needs to be done to try to correct the system. Thank you so very much for being with us today. Dr. Vieira?
Yes, here. Oh,
okay, fine. Well, why don't you just sort of tell our listeners how you got interested in the subject of money and about the things that you've written on this.
My interest actually extends all the way back to the time I was studying law initially, and I picked it up something as a hobby because I was studying economics on my own. I went to Harvard, and Harvard, of course, was one of the bastions of what we would call liberal economics or welfare economics or socialist economics, really. So I had to pick up free market economics more or less on my own hook. And one of the things I discovered as I investigated the subject was that the monetary system, the banking system, and the relationship of government to money in banking was really one of the key elements in determining the success or failure of any economic system, and particularly here in the United States, where we had primarily a free market economic system from the beginning, which gradually was infiltrated with more and more intervention and then eventually control by the government and special economic interests allied with the government, politically allied with the government. So that's the background.
And, of course, we've really adopted step by step many of these socialist programs, which have always been doomed to failure and abandoned, in many respects, the free enterprise system.
Oh, there's no question of that. But when you say failure, it's failure from whose perspective? That is, these programs are put in because some people will benefit from them. It may very well be that the vast majority of people suffer from them in one way or another, but a political system is not always designed to benefit the vast majority of the population.
Well,
our system, constitutionally speaking, of course, it's exactly the reverse. If you look at the preamble to the Constitution, it talks about the general welfare as being one of the goals that the Founding Fathers set out in that instrument. Of course, when they talked about the general welfare, they were talking about the welfare of the common Americans, not any particular elite group or special economic or political interest group.
Well, I think that, of course, the most widely perceived misconception in America today is that the Federal Reserve System has to do with the federal government. It's really a privately owned central bank, isn't it, designed to benefit bankers and, of course, impoverish the people?
Well, the Federal Reserve System is precisely that. It's a system. It's made up of 10 regional banks and then very many thousands of what they call member banks, which are private commercial banks. It has a capstone, the Board of Governors. And of course, everyone knows Alan Greenspan, who is the chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. And that board is appointed by the president with confirmation by the Senate. So there's an element there of governmental involvement in the system. But when you go back down through the actual workings of it, it is primarily a banking cartel, and ultimately it was established for the benefit of two groups. First, and foremost for the benefit of the bankers, the large bankers primarily, who wanted a system that would enable them to expand credit and currency in a uniform and controlled fashion.
But the trouble is that they don't expand it in a uniform and controlled fashion. They've actually massively inflated the amount of money and created a monstrosity.
Oh, well, that's right, because the system internally has inconsistencies built into it. I mean, the theory of the Federal Reserve, if one goes back and looks at what was put on the table politically for selling it, was that it was supposed to even out the so-called business cycle and essentially scientifically manage money so that there would be no more inflationary periods and depressionary periods and so forth and so on. Of course, that was 1913. In 1920 to 1921, you had the first large depressionary phenomenon under the auspices of the Federal Reserve. And then, of course, in the early 1930s, you had the major one known as the Great Depression. So the theory that the Federal Reserve could come in and scientifically manage things was pretty much demolished within about 10 or 15 years of its creation. Unfortunately, the American people, and I suppose primarily the politicians, the political group in this country, didn't learn the lesson of those events and turned around and during the 30s gave even more powers to the Federal Reserve. And subsequently, it's been expanded to the point now where under the Monetary Control Act of 1980, the Federal Reserve System has been given the authority essentially to monetize the debt of the entire world.
And, of course, that means that we loan money to banks that they lend to other countries, and if those countries default, why, the good old taxpayer has to pick that up.
Well, that's right. You get some kind of a bailout. And, of course, that's the other point that I was going to make. The Federal Reserve System was set up, in one sense, primarily for the business interests of large bankers. But it was set up, of course, in conjunction with the political establishment. The political establishment saw an advantage to having this kind of system because the bankers could turn around and monetize governmental debt, that is, inflate the currency and credit supplies of the country in such a way as to transfer wealth into the hands of the political class and out of the hands of common Americans. So there's really a symbiotic relationship there.
And I think it's really so important to realize that the system was never set up to help the average man, although that's what it was sold as, but it was really to enrich the ruling class and impoverish the poor. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Ed Vieira.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. Recently, a medical journal reported on the world's first proven remedy for the common cold, Allicin, the active ingredient in garlic. During winter months, a pure Allicin garlic extract reduce the risk of the common cold by 50%. This was demonstrated in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, science's highest measure of effectiveness. Where do you get pure Allicin? You won't find it in store-bought garlic pills, but you'll find it in Alamax. Alamax provides the equivalent of 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Where do you get Alamax? Dial this number now, 866-405-4000. Learn more about Alamax at 866-405-4000.
All right, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention something I've been taking for 8 to 10 years. It's called Be Alive Royal Jelly, and basically it's designed to give you more energy, and it's sold with a money-back guarantee. It's really what the queen bee eats in the hive, and she lives about 6 years. She's just the same as any other bee, except she eats the royal jelly, and everybody else just eats the honey and the honeycomb, and well, the other free bees last about 6 weeks. So if you'd like, of course, to learn more about Be Alive Royal Jelly products, if you feel run down or tired or chronic fatigue, give them a call at 866-233-7500. That's 866-233-7500. And as I said, it's sold with a money-back guarantee. If at the end of 3 months you're not really feeling better, why, they'll refund your money. I think you'll be very, very pleased that you tried Be Alive Royal Jelly products. And then, of course, you remember that here at Radio Liberty, we do carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims on them at all. And we will tell you that many of the people who use them simply tell us that they've had some wonderful, wonderful results. But give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Ed Vieira, and of course, he's a graduate of Harvard University in law school. Certainly, we're talking about the monetary system. It was on the 19th of December of last year when Alan Greenspan was addressing the Economic Club of New York, and this is what he said. Although the gold standard could hardly be portrayed as having produced a period of price tranquility, it was the case that the price level in 1929 was not much different on net from what it had been in 1800. But in the two decades following the abandonment of the gold standard in 1933, the consumer price index in the United States nearly doubled, and in the four decades after that, prices quintupled. Monetary policy unleashed from the constraints of domestic gold convertibility has allowed a persistent overissuance of money. As recently as a decade ago, central bankers, having witnessed more than a half a century of chronic inflation, appeared to confirm that a fiat currency was inherently subject to excess. Now, that's quite a statement coming from the head of the central bank, because what he's saying is their system of fiat money doesn't work. And I don't think that the average individual even understands what fiat money is. Would you want to just briefly try to explain to them what our monetary system is or was and what it's become?
To understand this, you have to focus on three concepts. Commodity money is money in which the unit that you hold in your hand is an actual valuable commodity. People talk of the gold standard, the silver standard. What they're thinking about there are gold or silver coins which actually circulate for the purposes of exchange, which are kept in the banks and in deposits and so forth and so on. That's commodity money. The next level, or actually going downwards, if you will, in terms of stability, is what's known as fiduciary money. Fiduciary means trust. And that usually is something of the nature of a bank note or government treasury note, which is redeemable in commodity money. And there's the element of trust that's involved. You take this note from the bank promising that when you show up at the cashier's window, it will give you a gold coin or a silver coin in redemption of that note. The third level, the lowest level, is what's known as fiat currency. Fiat from the Latin, let it be. Currency. And it's made currency as a result almost always, in terms of the history of this thing, almost always as the result of some political decree, some governmental decree which compels people as a matter of law, backed up by some kind of penalties, to take this material, usually paper. Of course, now we can think of it in terms of electronic deposits and so forth because we've advanced technologically, I suppose. And the sequence of events historically in this country and in most others in which this devolution has taken place, the country starts off with commodity money, which is, of course, what the Founding Fathers gave us in the Constitution, the silver dollar and gold coinage. And then at some point in time, the banks and the government, or the banks in collusion with the government, begin putting out fiduciary currency that is redeemable in gold or in silver. Of course, the classic example in the United States when that first happened was in the Civil War in 1862 when they put out the so-called greenbacks, Union greenbacks. All right, that goes on for a period of time, and you see that with fiduciary money, you can increase the supply of money above and beyond the amount of gold and silver that's available in society, because not all of that paper money is going to come back for redemption. Some of it will continue to circulate. So it was to the advantage of banks to begin to put out this kind of money because they could make more profit on it. The difficulty with that is if you put out too much and you undermine the confidence of people in the marketplace, then they begin to come back in larger and larger numbers, faster and faster, to the issuing agency, the banks typically, demanding redemption. The banks don't in fact have enough gold and silver to redeem, and they go bankrupt. Well, yep. That's what happened in the great banking crisis of the 1930s, interestingly enough, under the Federal Reserve System. And at that point, there's a tremendous pressure politically because they want to save the banking system or save the governmental treasury from declaring bankruptcy, to move in the direction of fiat money and simply to say, well, this stuff is not going to be redeemed anymore. You're going to have to accept it as is and use it, circulate it, and the government will impose a legal tender law requiring you to do that. And, of course, that's precisely what happened with Federal Reserve notes. Federal Reserve notes were created in 1913. They were a fiduciary money. They were redeemable in gold. And the Federal Reserve banks had to keep a 40% reserve of gold for that redemption. Well, the system overexpanded. Comes the Great Depression and collapse in 29, 31, 32. The banking system essentially implodes because they didn't have sufficient gold or silver to redeem their notes as fast as people were bringing them in. Roosevelt steps in, closes the bank, seizes the people's gold, and the Federal Reserve System now goes, as they say, off the gold standard. That is, it repudiates its promise to pay in gold, and the Federal Reserve note then becomes something like a fiat money. And I say something like because you can still redeem Federal Reserve notes if you were to go to the Treasury and demand it with the junk coinage, the so-called sandwich coins or clad coins that they generate from the Treasury. Of course, those contain no silver or gold, although I guess the new Sacagawea dollar has some kind of aluminum coloration on it that gives it a gold tint. So it's not quite fiat money because there is something real that you can get for it from the Treasury, but it certainly is not a fiduciary money and certainly not a commodity money.
But, of course, the advantage of this system for the banks is they can create money out of nothing and then lend it out, and they have the audacity to charge us interest on money they've created out of nothing.
That's exactly right, and that's why it advantages them to go from commodity money, which has a limited amount because only so much can be produced out of the ground, to go to fiduciary money where they can generate more, and then eventually to go to fiat money where they can generate essentially as much as they want. Now, the consequence, though, is that the more they generate, the higher prices tend to go. You get what the public calls inflation, higher and higher prices of goods and services. Also, and that particular, inflation is one of those things you could probably live with for a long time in a strong society. If you had an otherwise strong economy, inflation is probably not going to destroy it for many, many years. But the other consequence of this expansion of the money supply is that they generate essentially a bubble in the capital markets. And that deranges the entire structure of production. And in fact, that's what we're beginning to see now is the result of this long-term Federal Reserve inflation following the Great Depression, which is having its effect in undermining the stability of the basic economic foundations of the country. And of course, it puts someone like Alan Greenspan in a very difficult position, because as the economy begins to contract and have these difficulties as the result of the Federal Reserve's inflation, he only has one alternative, and that is to inflate more.
And, of course, the thing is that what's happened is we have a massive, massive, massive debt. Everybody's been spending money, paper money, electronic money, didn't matter. With the credit cards, you can buy. And of course, what's happening, where you can buy a car now, a Mitsubishi car, nothing down, no interest, and your first payment in the year 2004, you can get, it's a year off. You can even buy furniture the same way, a play now and pay later. you know, if you can. But of course, what happens if you can't pay for these things a year from now? What's going to happen to these automotive companies? What's going to happen to the furniture companies? What's going to happen to our society if, you know, as we begin, prices begin to drop, and pretty soon that car is not worth anywhere near what you paid for it? And the same thing is really happening with many of our houses, as the prices haven't really started coming down yet. But if we do hear what they've done in Japan, they've actually lost 80, sometimes 90% of property values over there.
Well, that's exactly right. That's the consequence following the expansion of the bubble. You're going to have a retrenchment in prices. And that's why I said a moment ago that the only response that the government of the banking system has is to generate what they call more liquidity, more money to drive prices up.
But then that destroys the value of pension funds and annuities and insurance policies and bonds, and it wipes out the middle class.
Well, that's the vicious nature of the system. You see, they've created a system that has inherent in it this fundamental breakdown. It cannot continue indefinitely. And it will reach a point, as it did once in the 30s, as a classic example, it can reach a point of crashing into a depression. Or, what is more likely now, because they have the ability to generate essentially an infinite amount of credit, because there's no gold or silver backing that's limiting what they can do, in order to try to prevent that, they'll first generate a huge wave of inflation. You have what's called hyperinflation, inflation on the South American scale, hundreds of percent per year. And now, this country has been very fortunate because our position economically was extraordinarily strong even when the Federal Reserve was first created. So we haven't gone through a whole series of these inflationary phenomena.
We're going to have to interrupt you right there. We'll be right back in just a moment. And, of course, we want to develop these ideas, and then, of course, we'll open up our lines for questions. So right now, of course, I just want to mention to our listeners that if you have a child who's in a government school or a grandchild, you really need to get a Phonopoly game for them so they can learn to read phonetically, to spell phonetically, to pronounce words phonetically, because phonics is the key to learning, and we're just not teaching our children across America the phonics. So they're teaching them in homeschooling, but they're deliberately dumbing down the children in government schools. So if you'd like to find out about Phonopoly, it's a game, a play just like Monopoly. And you actually get, you get houses and apartment houses, and you have money, and really it's a fun game to play. But in the process, you can begin to train the child's mind on how to pronounce and how to take a word apart. You learn the 12 basic rules of the English language, the 40 different sounds, and most of these programs are $300 or $400. This is $139.95, and we throw in a couple of books to explain to you how they've dumbed down our children. Call 1-800-544-8927 and ask for a Phonopoly. And then we also carry a homeschooling program put together by Dr. Art Robinson. He trained his 6 children with it, and when the 2 boys graduated from high school, they went right into the 3rd year of college. It's a superb educational program. It's on 22 CDs, and everything's there, the tests, the textbooks, the lesson plans, the answers to the tests. All you need, of course, is to print the whole program out on your computer. You have to buy the Saxon math textbook separately, but all the rest of the textbooks are there, $199.95, and the child goes from kindergarten all the way through high school graduation and comes out with an outstanding education. And you don't have to invest an awful lot of time. It's designed so the child can teach themselves with the material that's there. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, Phonopoly, or the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum.
This is a fascinating 4-tape set, Genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something they might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our 4-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Dr. Ed Vieira. And before I go on, I don't want to forget to mention Dr. Vieira has written a book. Is that book available at all? Any copies of the book available? Do you want to put that out on your website, perhaps?
Right. It came online today. The website is Pieces of Eight.
Now, is that all one word?
Yeah, one word. PiecesofEight.us. One of the new domain names.
All right.
Of 8.us, and it gives all the details on the book and how to order.
All right, fine. That's Pieces of 8 .us, and I can recommend the book to you. Dr. Vieira is internationally known as an expert on the monetary system, in addition to being a lawyer and, of course, involved in a number of... You've actually argued cases before the Supreme Court?
For my sins.
Okay. Well, anyway, you know, it's certainly a very well known in conservative circles. Now, we were beginning to discuss, of course, the monetary system, and really, of course, the situation we face today, as this whole system is beginning to come unravel because these bubbles that have been created because of the chronic inflation and the irresponsibility of our system, you know, the Fed and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have put $5 trillion increased debt over the last 3 years. And you can look up the Fed total debt figures 3 years ago and today, $5 trillion increase, bringing it up to $30 trillion of debt. And that's what they'll admit to. They've got another $1 trillion of payments that they promised Social Security, Medicare, pensions. There's no way they're going to come up with the money. So we have really an overwhelming debt we're facing today. The corporations are in debt. Our states are in debt. The individuals are in debt. Now we have a tremendous housing debt here built upon this inflated bubble. So what happens now?
Well, what happens now is one has to come back to the realization that debts are always paid. If the debtor doesn't pay, the creditor pays. That is, the creditor loses the value of the debt, or some third party may come in and pay. Now, the difficulty, of course, is that even if these payments are made in nominal terms, as they say, dollar for dollar, the value of those dollars that are paid will not be equivalent to the value today. If you have a $5 trillion debt and you can't pay it off, in real terms, the government will pay it off in nominal terms, but the value of those units with which it pays will be much, much smaller. And that's why I say, the person in Mr. Greenspan's position, because I'm not blaming Mr. Greenspan, I think anyone in his position is riding a tiger. There's no way out of this problem now for them if they don't begin to move in the direction of reforming the monetary system by bringing back commodity money into it in some way. There's no return for them or a methodology for them to deal with this problem except through increased inflation.
Well, do you think that the new colored money that they're coming up with may be an alternative that they're thinking of down the line? Or what is this really all about? Have you gone into that at all?
Well, some of it has to do with control and prevention of counterfeiting and so forth and so on. Some of it may have to do with, psychologically conditioning people to see continuing changes in their monetary unit so they won't become terribly upset and perhaps politically restive. Remember, in South America, this kind of thing has happened historically over and over again. They'll have one huge bout of inflation, and they'll change one form of currency for another form of currency, knock two or three zeros off the figures, and then they'll go through another bout of inflation, And we haven't gone through that yet in this country.
No, but of course, that means that if you have a defined benefit pension plan and you're going to get, you know, a $1,500, $2,000 a month pension when you retire, you may get that $2,000 a month, but it won't buy your loaf of bread.
Oh, that's right. Or you may get $20 of the new dollars because they've introduced a new currency into the system that supposedly has a stable purchasing power. That's the trick that they go through. One of the things, obviously, that they're attempting to do here, and this ties in with what people talk about in the New World Order and NAFTA and the North and South America Free Trade Union and so forth and so on, if they can keep expanding this bubble into new markets, they can, for longer and longer period, maintain a certain semblance of stability. And, of course, there's China, there's South America, potentially there's even Africa. About a year or so, 2 years ago, they were talking about having some kind of African common market. This thing is really a Ponzi scheme. And anyone who understands a Ponzi scheme knows that that kind of an operation works only by bringing in new players. You've got to continuously expand the game in order to give it the semblance of stability. Once that expansion stops, for whatever reason, political, economic, psychological, I mean, there's no way really to predict why, but once that expansion stops, then the bubble has only one way to go, and that's into contraction. And contraction, historically, will look something like the Great Depression of the 1930s. Well, and then you know what Roosevelt did. He came in on a platform, actually it was funny, he came in on a platform of sound money, sound currency. And the first thing that he did when after he took the oath of office was to advance a program of radical inflation. That was the Democratic Party program in the early 1930s. It was inflationism.
Well, I think that people have forgotten that the Democrats were the conservative party, the Republicans were the liberals, and now they've done a flip-flop. I'm really not sure that the Republicans are really conservative at all, but I believe that both parties are heading the same direction towards these same inflationary policies. In fact, the Republicans are advocating more spending now than the Democrats would ever have done to do, except the Republicans aren't going to try to finance it at all. They're just going to increase the debt.
Well, the one thing about these two parties is neither one of them questions the present financial and banking system.
So what can be done? Because certainly it is the banking system. It is this privately owned cartel, which is, of course, a violation of the law. But who is going to challenge these people of great wealth? The American people really don't understand the monetary system, number one. And secondly, you know, the people who are in charge certainly don't want to give up their power. They don't want to be held responsible for what they've done, but they're going to lead to the impoverishing of the middle class in America, as they have recently. They've wiped out the middle class of Argentina. Can that same thing happen here?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any question of it, because coming back to the point that I made earlier, this system has an internal flaw. This is, you're working with a machine, in a sense, in which not all of the gears mesh, and at a certain point, that failure to mesh is going to throw everything into chaos, perhaps, is not too strong a word. Now, the South Americans have gone through this a number of times, primarily because their economies were not big enough, I think, to absorb the level of damage that their banking and political system was doing to them. You know, if you're a strong person, you can take a tremendous amount of damage from drinking and smoking and not exercising and so forth and so on, whereas if you're a weak person, you can't. The same thing is true of economies and political systems. This country is economically terrifically strong, so we can take a tremendous amount of abuse from our politicians and our bankers that would destroy other countries much more quickly. But when the time finally comes, when those gears finally stop meshing properly, this country will face the same type of problem, perhaps on a larger scale even, than countries such as Argentina and Brazil and Uruguay and so forth in South America have faced. And remember one thing here. Argentina is a classic example. Glad you mentioned that. Just, what was it, about a month ago or 2 months ago in the newspapers, they were showing pictures of people in Buenos Aires eating out of garbage cans because the economy had completely collapsed. Argentina was once the 15th wealthiest country in the world. It exported food all over the world. It had manufacturing, shipping, so forth and so on. Lots of people had come from Italy and Germany and other places in Western Europe and made Argentina into one of the great cultural centers of this hemisphere. And then it began a program, a political program of government interventionism, central bank expansionism. Of course, they had the Perones and one military junta after another. And now the country's a basket case. Every 4 and 5 years, it goes into one of these collapses, and people end up eating out of garbage cans. This is not accidental. This is not something that has to do with Argentinians or South Americans or whatever, a peculiar disease that they get. This is the result of an economic system that is inherently fallible, frangible, whatever word you want to use, an economic system, financial system, that fundamentally in the long run cannot work and must have crises of this kind, and there's no avoiding it.
Well, of course, a lot of that was the government excess. You know, everybody, the political cronies got big fat jobs, and it was government overspending and government overtaxing, you know, and creating this artificial prosperity, tying the peso to the dollar and guaranteeing that, of course, you had nothing to worry about. We would never cut the peso loose from the dollar. Don't take your money out of the banks. This talk of fear, you know, people take their money out of the bank are going to just corrupt the system and it's going to collapse. And the people, of course, left their money in the bank, and sure enough, the system collapsed. Well, and the people lost 70% of their life savings overnight, literally overnight.
That's right. Now, in this particular system that we have here in the United States, of course, they have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is the ultimate lulling device, convincing people that they can't lose money in the banking system because, of course, the government has required the banks to insure it, and the government is ultimately the deep pocket behind that system, which will bail out even the biggest banks if they fail. But once again, you have to ask the question, even assuming that the government has this guarantee that it's given to you, where does the government get the real purchasing power? Where does the government come up with this? Well, there's only two ways that the government can get it. Three, it could borrow, but we'll leave that aside for the moment. It can get it either by going to the banks and asking the banks to monetize governmental debt, which means we get more inflation, or it can get it by turning around to the taxpayers and taking wealth from Peter to pay Paul. There is no source of federal funds, some cornucopia of wealth out there. That's the myth in this system.
How about just printing the money?
Well, but that isn't a cornucopia of wealth. Yes, you can print money, but the consequence of printing money is you drive prices up and up and up until you go to hyperinflation and you destroy the entire system.
And that, of course, is my fear, that one of these days, faced with the option of doing what should be done and having a period of suffering or simply turning on the printing presses, they'll do what societies have always done, and that is turn on the printing presses.
Well, I think there's no question of that, because they know the great danger from depression, political danger. If you look at the 1930s, early 1930s in this country, when the depression hit, 31, 32, all sorts of radical political groups came out of the woodwork and gained a certain amount, not only of notoriety, but of public support. You had communists, you had socialists, you had radical inflationists. Every form of right and left-wing extremism gained a level of credibility because people were starving. People were out of work. They had no hope, at least in the short term, for getting out of this economic pit.
We're going to have to interrupt you there. We'll get right to that as soon as we get back. And right now, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported primarily. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you feel that we have information you're not going to get elsewhere, if you feel that you're going to get a commentary here that is important so you can see the world as it really is, not as it's projected on the flickering screen of your television set, if you'd like to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day by radio, 5 hours, internet, 5 hours, satellite, 3 hours, shortwave, 2 hours, and then, of course, our weekend program is heard on 35 different stations. If you'd like to help us try to educate the American people as long as we have a voice, then give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, why, of course, you'll be helping us pay the bills so that we can continue doing what we're doing and, of course, go along with our plans to expand our outreach across America. And of course, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, our December newsletter actually deals with the financial crisis we're facing and gets into the historical background of how we got to where we are and who is really responsible, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, or just ask for a free copy of that newsletter, the December newsletter. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. Pull down our programs there, or our archive programs. Tell others about the radio programs and the website, and do that right today.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest today is Dr. Edward Vieira, and we're, of course, talking about the monetary system. He was talking about getting out of the pit we're in, and just one more time, his website is Pieces of Eight. Remember Pieces of Eight? They were the pirates were always getting from the Spanish galleons. It's piecesofeight.us. So go there and learn about his material, learn about his book. But why don't you pick up the story from there?
Yes, well, recall we were talking about your prediction that the people in control of the banking system and the Treasury would turn to massive inflation to try and get themselves out of economic and political hot water. And I agree with you 100% because, recall, the depression of the 1930s was a very unstable period politically. And they remember that. And the same has been true in other countries throughout the world. Any time you go into a depressionary economic phenomenon, political instability follows as a matter of course because people are out of work, people are desperate. Whereas an inflationary phenomenon is one that many people can deal with. Certainly businessmen can deal with it because they can raise their prices, they can make anticipations about price changes. And in fact, this is a little vignette here going back to South America. A man by the name of Figi, who is the head of Figi International Corporation. He was very interested in this phenomenon. He sent some economists down to South America to study how businessmen reacted to South American inflationary events. And he published a book, it's probably now about 10 or 12 years ago, I would think, that dealt with that question. And the basic thrust of it was that these South American businessmen had figured out ways to continue to function even in the huge inflations that were going on in Uruguay and Argentina and Brazil and so forth and so on. And our politicians and our businessmen and our bankers understand that. You can live a long time with inflation. You can't live very long with depression. So if they begin to fear that the economy is going into a deep recession, the economy perhaps may be going into a depression, they will open the spigots of inflation as wide as necessary to fend that off. Now, the difficulty is that if they generate a hyperinflation, as occurred in several of these South American countries, occurred in Germany in the early 1920s, what follows a hyperinflation historically has always been a depression. So they're really playing with fire. That's why I say a man such as Alan Greenspan, I feel sorry for him. He's riding a tiger. He's riding he's on the back of a tiger, as the expression goes. What do you do when you're on the back of the tiger? Well, you better not get off. You know what I mean? It's a very difficult position.
Well, you know, it's very interesting in Rhodesia today, why they, of course, everything's beginning to implode. The inflation rate there is 146% now. And, of course, everybody's buying homes. Now, they're not buying homes to live in. They're buying homes because they figure the price will go up. They're going out. They're not putting their money in the bank. They're buying television sets because they have intrinsic value. And, of course, they realize that if they have the money in the bank, it's going to be destroyed. So they're buying all these things, hoping that they'll find somebody down the line who will buy them back at a fair market value. And this is what happens when you lose confidence in money. It's happening to the population, both black and white, in Rhodesia today, as that society is just imploding. 60% unemployment in the blacks.
Right. And there's one of the vicious phenomena that occurs late in one of these inflationary bubble cycles, is not only do you have inflation, increases in prices, but you've so undermined the economy that you have unemployment, you have jobs being exported to other countries, businesses being exported to other countries, all of those phenomena. And there's a word for this. It's called stagflation. Economists have seen this in some areas of the world, called it stagflation, a situation where the economy is in stagnation or even perhaps in recession or moving in the direction of depression, but simultaneously you have huge inflations because the banking system and the government is trying to essentially float the whole economy out of the recession through increasing the supply of money and credit, but it's not working because the economy is realizing or has realized what the banks and the government are doing, and the inflationary trick is no longer functioning. You have to remember that inflation is used for the purpose of trying to convince businessmen that times are good. There's more money, there's more credit, so they can expand their businesses, they can create new jobs, and so forth and so on. At a certain point in time, wily businessmen look at that and say, oh yes, there's more credit, but it's not real. If I take that credit and I expand my business, 2 years down the line, I'm going to find myself in difficulty and I may be bankrupt, so I'm not going to accept any more loans. I'm not going to take out any more loans. And then you end up in the position of stagflation because the banks and the government are trying to generate this stuff, this increased supply of money and credit, but the real economy is not accepting it. And you have the worst of all possible worlds.
Well, it's very interesting, of course, the new Bush plan. You know, there are going to be all sorts of benefits to people to try to get to industry, to try to get them to start, you know, investing again, certainly try to get the stock market going by saying that people aren't going to have to pay dividends or income tax on the dividends they get from the stock market, trying to get manipulate people into getting back into the stock market. Well, an awful lot of them have gotten burned, and if I was, you know, looking at the stock market today, with the dividends such as they are, there's no way that I would want to get into the stock market. So, but they're doing everything they can by government manipulation to try to make this thing work. Really, we have to get back to some sort of a gold-backed or at least commodity-backed monetary system, don't we? Or we will simply go right through all these same processes over and over again as has happened down through the centuries?
Well, I think that's right. But, you know, I was about to say we have to get back to this. We will get back to it. Because once this system collapses, there will be no alternative but going back to it. The great difficulty is, once this system collapses, one cannot predict what the political ramifications will be, what kind of extreme political responses we'll see developing. The thing that worries me most about this is, if I were in, there's no possibility of this happening, but if I were an advisor to President Bush, I would say, listen, what you really need to do now, quietly but effectively, you have to begin talking about how we're going to reform the entire banking system to bring back a gold and silver base to it. Perhaps not gold and silver coinage immediately, perhaps it'll just be a matter of a reserve and so forth and so forth. We've got to begin moving in that direction and educating people as to why that needs to be done.
And, of course, the real reason is because when you have a gold and silver base, the bankers cannot create all this artificial money and credit, which is the basis of the problems we're having.
That's right. And the government cannot use the bankers to increase its ability to spend without having to tax. See, you have to remember there's a link between the bankers and the government. The government isn't doing what it does for the bankers simply because it likes bankers. And the bankers are not doing what they do for the government simply because they like government. It's because each one of them has a symbiotic role to play with the other, right? There's the bacteria and there's the petri dish. You have to have the two of them in order to function. Now,
I like that analogy.
Well, maybe it's a scurrilous suggestion, but I think it's accurate. All right? You have to have the two of them there together to function. And the founding fathers recognized that you had to have a monetary system that excluded the possibility of the government being able to expand currency. Why did they think that? Because under the Articles of Confederation, during the War of Independence, they themselves had been in control of the Continental Congress, and what had they done to finance that war?
They printed continental currency.
That's right. They printed continental currency. It had hyperinflation, destroyed the whole economy. It was unbelievable. You read that period of time, the economic history of it, and it'll be a lesson to anyone in everything that we're talking about today. They had done that themselves, and they said, wait a minute, this had a terrible effect. We have to stop this in the future. And that's the reason they wrote the Constitution the way they did, to tie the government down to the silver and gold standard so that the government would not be in a position to manipulate the monetary system either for its own benefit or for the benefit of special interests such as bankers or financiers or what have you. Now, what happened historically, of course, was you had corruption come into the system. The banking community, very early on, got into, cooperative spirit with the politicians. You had the Bank of the United States. Then, of course, you had the National Bank Act under the Lincoln administration, the Civil War. Then, of course, you had the Federal Reserve System coming in 1913, and that's been expanded and expanded and expanded in terms of its powers because the government and the bankers have essentially a racket going here. The government gives more and more power to the bankers, and the bankers then are in a position to monetize more and more governmental debt so the politicians can promise further and further spending programs without having backbreaking taxation that would throw them out of office.
Yes, but if someday you have to pay the piper, someday they're going to have to pay all these pensions and medical benefits they promised and they have no money for. $20 trillion of that is outstanding
That's
today.
Right.
And they know there's no way it's ever going to be worked out. They just hope that they'll retire with their good pensions and all their benefits before the whole house of cards comes down.
That's right. And the next generation will end up with higher and higher inflation. And instead of receiving a pension of 100 cents on the dollar, they'll receive a pension of 5 cents on the dollar.
Right.
That's the game plan. You live for today. You let the future generations bear the burden of your profligacy.
And, of course, my contention is that much of the new expansion of government power and watching over the people as they expect civil unrest, they're not so worried about the Islamic terrorists as they are about the American citizen, which is why they're collecting dossiers on everybody, because, of course, if we do get into crisis, they certainly will want to be able to manage that crisis. Ed, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Yes, my parting thought is, it's absolutely necessary for people to learn as much as possible about this system. It's their ignorance that allows the politicians and their allies in the financial community to do what they're doing.
And that's why, of course, you've written a book.
I and others. I mean, there's a lot of other material out there, and I'm not the only person working in this field. But your listeners need to educate themselves on this subject.
Well, we'll try to get you back on here again. I'd like to get into it in a lot more detail. Thanks so much for being with us. And
thank you. Anytime,
look forward to meeting with you later. Bye-bye and God
bless
you. Okay, well, that was Dr. Ed Vieira. And I think that this is a fascinating subject. You've got to understand how it works, and we'll be having other programs going into the background of a monetary system that was set up to enrich the bankers and impoverish the people. And that, of course, is coming. Our wealth is being transferred to other nations. Our industry is being transferred to other nations. They know exactly what they're doing. They just want the American people to know. Well, I'm painting a bleak picture, but it is. And the only reason it's happening is because the people don't understand. It's time to take America back, to reclaim our heritage, to reclaim our Constitution. Pray for America. Pray for revival, because, of course, our freedom came from God. And if we don't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on this country forever. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
calls, though.
What's that?
There are no calls in the district.
Well, no, I think that was because everybody was listening. I think the people were fascinated by what he was saying. And he speaks for the Greek community. He's an internationally known figure and a very, very smart man.
Yes.